The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts.
This episode of the Podcast of Terror is brought to you by frequent guest Matt Vincent. Use our coupon code KICK15 for 15% off your order at thehate.com. That's THEHVIII.com. Hello and welcome to another Podcast of Terror. I totally lost my train of thought, which is not very uncommon for me. This is a production of Galactic Netcasts. I am your host, Matt Stein. With me always is Corey. It stings when I pee, Scott. Corey, how are you?
It's just a light burn. Even much of a sting so much as it's kind of like an astringent, so it feels almost cleansing.
I still feel like you should go and get that checked out by your proctologist. I don't know if that's the right doctor, but...
There's a guy named Jimmy down the street who's just right behind the Big Lots.
Oh, Jimmy Fatfingers? Yeah, he'll check you out.
I don't care.
For more on this podcast, including show notes, contact information, subscription links, go to gncast.com/pot. For other shows from the Galactic Netcast, you can just go to gncast.com. You don't need pot for that one. The Podcast of Terror is rather spoiler-heavy, so if you have not seen the topics which we are discussing, which this week is the 2016 Netflix smash mega-sensation Hush, you're going to want to go ahead and pause this, watch that, come back when your nipples are hard. Also, I swear a lot.
Yes. You can actually listen to this over the movie Hush. I'm going to give you fair warning.
Jesus.
There's not a lot of dialogue.
Yeah, I saw there was a fact. It was the whole movie was 85 minutes, and there was 15 minutes of dialogue in the entire movie.
Yeah.
Which, it helped because it forced me to pay attention.
You can just put on subtitles and watch that.
Well, most of it is subtitled. It's the hand drive.
Born 2,
yeah,
baby.
Fucking bad. Before we get into the movie, I'm going to make Corey talk about news, which is funny because Corey's usually the one that finds it. First of all, I added this one because I backed the shit out of this thing. There's an Indiegogo campaign, which, as always, the links for this stuff will be in the show notes on the Galactic Netcast website. But there's a documentary about Kane Hodder called To Hell and Back, which they are currently trying to fund. Trying to get $50,000. They're 4 days in, and they have $3,500. I'm really hopeful for this because I actually spent a bunch of money to get a signed prop machete from him.
Awesome.
Well, I was actually talking to a coworker. Like, I'm like, you got to help me, because I was like, I will spend $250, and you can get a real machete that he breaks your DVD in half with. You still get a download of it, but I'm like, that'd be kind of cool. Just fucking... And you get a video of him breaking it, but I was like, a prop machete is the same thing. You know what I mean? At least he signed this.
No, that's really cool. And a lot of people are involved in this. There are cameos by Robert Englund, Cassandra Peterson, who people should know as Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, Sid Haig, Bruce Campbell, Danielle Harris.
You skipped Bill Moseley.
I did.
Who's in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 or 3? And also The Devil's Rejects and House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yes. I was trying to work. Is that the Insane Clown Posse? What are
those people? No. That's Twisted. They let me school you here on a little ICP knowledge. They were like the second ICP type band. They just tour a lot together. They were on the same record label. Very, very similar, but a little different. I did like that band.
And I feel like I learned something today, and I can't wait to unlearn it.
Yeah, well, the thing about them, I'm going to cut you off real quick, but a lot of their stuff was very horror movie-esque. They were originally called the Samhain Witches, or Samhain something or other.
Nothing to do with Glenn Danzig, though.
No. I'm looking this up. But yeah, give me a minute. Keep talking.
Yeah, so anyways, there's a bunch of different shit. Like Matt said, you can buy or you can get a machete. You can donate for as little as a buck. And I know you people love to donate just a buck because that's what we look for you for our Patreon here at gncast.com. But you can get Kane tweets and Instagrams. You can get the shirt off of his back, DVD and a T-shirt, VHS tapes, which I just think is amazing. And so on and so forth.
My favorite one is for $300 American plus shipping, you can get a 20-minute Skype call from him where he threatens your life and hangs up.
So it's kind of like hearing from my mortgage broker.
Yeah, right. Pay us, fucker. yeah, there's a lot of like really cool and unique things. Like you can buy a DVD, but he holds it ransom, and you have to take the ransom letter and meet him in person to actually get it, which I think is kind of cool, but it's also ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous, but it's also the perfect kind of thing for Kane Hodder and for his fans.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
I just can't imagine how anybody who is a horror fan wouldn't want to give their left nut to be a part of this.
Yeah. Going back, Twisted was originally called the House of Crazy, House of Crazies, and they also went under the name the Samhain Witch Killers with a Z.
That's so awesome. It's like Jackal with a Y.
Pretty much.
Shitty band names taken to that next level.
Yeah. But yeah, that's your Insane Clown Posse and Company trivia for the week.
Right on. Speaking of trivial, John C. McGinley, who you might remember from Scrubs as Dr. Cox, and also I was one of the four people who watched Ground Floor. He is signed up to top line an IFC comedy horror series, called Stan Against Evil. McGinley's one of those guys that I really enjoy watching. And I loved Scrubs for a while until it got
weird.
Repeated all the goddamn time.
Yeah.
I was actually watching it when it was on NBC before it hit syndication. And this should be pretty good. It's from, and part of the reason why I included this was for you, is that it's from the writer Dana Gould, who is a writer for The Simpsons.
Oh, shit.
So,
well, hopefully,
yes.
If she's a writer for The Simpsons, that they do a better job on this, because The Simpsons is kind of shitty now.
Oh, absolutely. And Dana Gould is, I believe, a current Simpsons writer, and his comedy has always been kind of a little weird to me, but still, it seems like this should be fun, at least. It also has Janet Varney in it. She plays a character on You're the Worst. She's the ex-girlfriend of the main British guy who's married and whose sister is a total train wreck. Well, everybody on the show is a train wreck. But yeah, so Stan Against Evil follows Stanley Miller, McGinley, a sour, aging bulldog of New England police sheriff, who has recently lost his position as head honcho due to an angry outburst at a most inappropriate moment, his wife's funeral. Impatient and judgmental, he's not exactly accepting or kind towards people from different walks of life. And when the new strong-willed sheriff, Eve Barrett, played by Varney, opens his eyes to the plague of angry demons haunting their small New Hampshire town, Stan begrudgingly joins an alliance with her to fight them off. I think it's a 10-episode series that they've got it approved for right now, and he seems really excited to be on it, not just because it's a work, but also because it sounds like fun. And comedy horror is one of those things that we don't see a lot of, and yet the next story is going to give us a little bit more of it.
Yeah, comedy horror's a strange thing, you know what I mean? No.
We've watched a few things on here, obviously.
Yeah.
Deathgasm, Shaun of the Dead.
John Dies at the End.
John Dies at the End. We've had some very good comedy horror on here. Gremlins 2 is probably more of a comedy than a horror, but still works for, you know, having some potential crossover.
It works for the horrors.
Yes.
I don't know what that was supposed to be.
I don't know what that means either, Jimmy. Fat fingers. So, anyways, on top of that, another story. Awesomest TV horror series, Freakish, is acquired by Hulu. So this is another series that is being picked up that is, I believe, in the comedy horror vein. Hulu picked up the rights to Freakish from Awesomeness TV. 10-episode horror series will begin production later this year. The story centers around a group of students from a small-town high school who must fight for their lives against a meltdown at a local chemical plant that results in predatory mutant freaks attacking the town. That
could
we haven't
be really
seen
good.
A lot of mutant freaks in a long time. Like, I haven't.
Yeah, nothing comes to mind. Nothing immediately comes to mind.
Like, some of my favorite stuff from the 80s was things like Night of the Comet, which was just a terrific version of the humanity gets mutated by a comet coming over and only a few people are left okay. Because they were in sheds and things. And this could be a lot of fun. And has that same, like, that high school people fighting him off kind of reminds me of what we watched in Deathgasm.
Yeah, so when you say Night of the Comet, it makes me think of Maniac Mansion.
That's pretty awesome in and of itself, which I think you can play on Steam now.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, I think that is
hold
one of the things.
Hold the phone here while I look it up on Steam.
Day of the Tentacle. Day of the Tentacle,
I know they read it Day of the Tentacle, which is no Maniac Mansion, but
no,
it's still a very good sequel. I love those games.
It's got to be coming at the very least. So that's good, though. We've got a couple of new potential horror comedy series coming out to two different areas, one that you'll be able to see on your basic cable, and the other one, if you're a Hulu subscriber, which I still am not. They just haven't convinced me yet that all their content is worth that extra $10 a month on top of my Netflix subscription. But I kind of like them. I lean towards them more than probably Amazon Prime at this point, who are just being dicks.
Yeah, but do you not? You don't have Amazon Prime at all?
No. Not yet. So, and if I got it, it would not be because of their TV service or their movies, because so much of the stuff still isn't included in that. I would get it literally for the shipping.
Yeah, we have it for the shipping, and I just got an Echo came on Saturday. And,
ooh.
Which, they were on sale. They were like a one-day sale. And what I wanted to do a lot of home automation. So I got it for that mostly, and instantly connected my Spotify account to it. You know, because I can just say play this on Spotify or play this playlist on Spotify, and it works just the same. I mean, it natively connects to Google Music or Amazon Music, but whatever. I digress.
And see, that's the thing, is I'm a Google Play customer, and I don't know if the interaction between Google and Amazon is there, since Amazon keeps trying to wipe Google off of the stuff that they use. They're like, we're going to use the Android operating system, but we're not going to give you Google Maps. So see how our Fire Phone does. Oh, it went away.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about how quickly that thing went.
Music.
Sorry, I'm trying to look up because you can... smart home. I don't know how to fucking use this thing.
Computer?
No, that...
No wonder Strangeland is your favorite movie. That technology was right on the edge for you.
What am I doing? No, the Echo app, it'll show you all of the music and stuff that you can log into. It does Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and your Amazon Prime Music, as well as Audible and Kindle Books. No Google. It says a fuck you. So that's some tits ass shit that happened. So before we get into the movie, I feel like we should send some praise to a friend of ours.
Yeah, you know how every show for a long time we used to say things like you can email us at pot@gncast.com, and we kind of hope that people would do that, but then they don't. It's okay. We still maybe think you like us a little bit, but if you really do, you might email us a little nice letter and have some back and forth with us, which one person did, and that would be Lucy from the UK.
Yeah. So we've been pretty fortunate to have, I guess, two friends. We have two friends. Can we call them friends? But, we have a lot of interaction with Lucy in the UK, and then Martin on Twitter. And I talk quite a bit. Corey doesn't really weigh in on those conversations. But, I think we're going to try and have them on separate episodes. But it's the least we can do for them being... the fucking cat's meow.
I also just want to point out, Lucy says, I love how POT intellectualizes my horror obsession while teaching me new unpleasant terms for the penis. Now, I cannot think of a single pleasant term for the penis, so I guess we just keep talking about it.
I also,
it'll be endless.
I don't recall all of the names that I have given to a penis while doing these, so it's difficult to pinpoint, but...
Pinpoint would probably be the most pleasant term we can give it.
Killer Pillar.
At least about yours.
Killer Pillar is a good one. Yeah, pin my dick small. A big, thick throbber. Greasy dog dick. That's another good one. Corey, you're a dick garage. That's a new one I've come into. So
which is not about the penis. It's where the penis goes.
Yeah,
it's a parking spot.
It's your ability to take dick versus your
right.
Dick swinging abilities. So that was This Week in Dick with Matt and Corey.
Mine is just called Gerald.
I call mine the Hammer of Dawn. And the first thing my wife said when I told her this drunkenly, she goes, who the fuck is Dawn? I'm like, it's from a video game. And she won't let me live that one down.
No, I don't think you should.
No. Anyways, we watched a movie this week. I don't know if you could...
We did. This was suggested to us by the head of Galactic Netcast himself, Tasteful Dave Nelson.
Said,
hey, everybody is talking about this goddamn movie. You should get on the money train and get people listening to you by talking about what everybody else is talking about.
Which is true, man. We everywhere we looked, there's like, it was on lists of movies to watch and things on Netflix that you need to see and the top horror movies that are ever coming out in the history of the world. So we said, fuck it, and watched it.
Yeah, we said fuck it.
I don't really know a good not a lot happened, but a ton happened. It literally takes place in one setting
and one night, one day to night kind of. So in a 24-hour period, essentially, we get from daylight to the next daylight.
Yeah,
and this is a movie that was not my favorite horror subgenre, which is the cat and mouse slasher film, but a very well done version of it, at least.
Yes. I guess my question before I forget about it, because I have a shitty memory, is was the killer someone she knew?
No.
I didn't think so.
And the killer's motives are never really explored, which is probably one of the bigger complaints about the film that I've seen, and would be the one that I would have, is that he's just some random dude who winds up finding her out at her home as he's killing her neighbor slash friend. Mm-hmm. He chases her. She had just been over there earlier. She goes running back to this place as she's trying to escape him, looking for help. And her friend, the main character, Maddie, played by Kate Siegel, is deaf. Deaf and mute from a medical condition she had when she was 13.
Bacterial
she's a writer.
Meningitis.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's a writer. She's living in a very secluded house in the woods. She has a cat named Bitch, and she is living off of what is her last published book, trying to make her way through her next one. There's some talk between her and her friend Sarah about the writing and stuff. She has an ex-boyfriend named Craig that she's estranged from. We never see Craig.
Fuck you, Craig.
And his picture on her Apple products. This is also a lot of Apple advertising throughout this, but
yes,
in roundabout ways, it makes sense in how it's used. So this killer, played by John Gallagher Jr., who I remember only essentially from the Newsroom series on HBO, who was a very nice guy on that show, and so not the nice guy in this. He kills Sarah, and while he's killing her, Maddie is not noticing it because she can't hear the scream. She can't hear the banging on the windows. And he's like, why isn't she paying attention to me stabbing her friend repeatedly? And he taps on the windows and he realizes very quickly that she can't hear. Mm-hmm. And so he gets into her house, steals her phone, and then gets her attention with taking pictures of her, sending them to her through her own messenger, and letting her know that he's going to kill her at some point of the night when it suits him.
Yeah, it was really twisted. Not the rap duo we were talking about earlier, but like mentally twisted.
They were the soundtrack, which was good that everything was quiet.
Corey for the win. It was, yeah, like probably my favorite part when you kind of knew like, ooh, shit's going to get real, is when she writes on the window like, I haven't seen your face. We're good. My boyfriend's coming. And he just fucking takes the mask off and says, you've seen it now.
Yeah. And that was also kind of important, not just to show how serious it was that he does not plan on letting her live through the night, but also because since she's deaf, the only kind of real communication they can have is you have to be able to see his lips. Mm-hmm. And he can't talk to her at all through the mask, even going through the windows and stuff. There's the advantage of he can be outside, which is essentially, you know, at least sound muddled, but she can understand what he's saying to her very clearly because she can see his face and she can see his mouth moving. Some pretty twisted stuff in this. There's a point where he's tapping on the window using her dead friend's hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. And then just in general, like when Sarah's boyfriend, John, shows up and he pretends that he's a cop, and realizes that there's no way that he can fight John. So he's just kind of doing his best to confuse him, to keep him at bay by giving him this story of like, oh yeah, there was something that happened here. We don't know how to get into the house. This guy rammed into me and took my stuff. And so John's like sort of buying into it, sort of not buying into it. And then the killer drops Sarah's earring that he had used to kind of like taunt Maddie earlier. And John is just about to take the guy out with a big rock, but Maddie sees John, comes to the window and distracts him for just a second. And the killer just gets him right in the neck and then gets him, hamstrings him eventually and gets him down on the ground. And he's like, yeah, there's no way that I was going to win in a fair fight against you. John still like manages to almost take him out. And then we get what I think is probably what I find one of my favorite parts of the movie and what stands out to me about Maddie's character is she has a conversation earlier on with Sarah about how she's a writer and how she thinks in terms of she's got all these voices in her head telling her how the story is supposed to go. And any story that she has seven endings to at a time because she has to think them all through before she can write them down in her books. And she's frustrated in her current book because there's just so many endings and she's not sure which one to do. At this point in time, when John essentially distracts the killer, is dying, but is still holding him at bay and doing his best to give her a moment to escape, she faces in her mind the different scenarios of what it would take for her to get away and realizes that in every case, she would wind up dying. And I thought that was a very interesting moment, not only because of the viewpoint of I can see what's going to happen and I can see how it's going to fail, but also because that's the only time that we hear her talk, is her talking to herself, essentially.
Which, I mean, they kind of tackle earlier when they, her and Sarah, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, they're talking about, like, when she talks, what does it sound like? Like, when she talks in her head, what does her voice sound like? Does it sound like a kid? And she goes, oh, no, it sounds like my mom. So that they kind of give an explanation as to why she's, you know, she sounds the way that she sounds when they get there. Which,
yeah,
minute, potentially useless, but still, I thought it was kind of interesting that they seem to care enough to explain it.
Yeah, and we have these moments where, I mean, what did you think of the ending? Did you think the ending was going to be what it was?
I don't know.
Because there's the moment where John has got the killer on the ground, and we see, before we realize what she's doing, we see Maddie run out of the house, and the killer comes up, tackles her, and just bashes her head in with a big rock.
Yeah, which I don't know which was worse, that or her hand.
The hand thing was, well, being real, the hand thing was worse, but also it was, they were both pretty horrific scenes, but at that point in time, I kind of realized, but we didn't know for sure that Maddie wasn't actually dead.
That's true.
There are moments in this where it just seems like she's dead, or there's no way she's going to make it out of this. And she's convinced herself that there's no way that she's going to live. She's been shot in the leg, and then she has her hand essentially destroyed when she does try to fight back against the killer using his own crossbow against him. She knows she's losing a lot of blood. She knows that the idea of getting help is probably just out of bounds.
Yeah.
And
did you just quote Guy Fieri right there?
I don't know that I did.
Okay. He likes to describe food as out of bounds, unlike the dicks that he puts into his mouth. Those are definitely
her broken hand made me think of wonderful buttery chicken fingers. they're on point. I just know that at the very least, there was a lot of moments in this where it really could have ended up that she did not live. And either the killer gets away with it, or even defeating him, she doesn't make it anyways. So it was, I was never really prepared for it to be one or the other. You know, it was just kind of like, it could go this way, it could go the other way. And that is good, because I'm usually not surprised by films at all. And I wasn't necessarily surprised by the ending. And in fact, it wraps up maybe even a little too cleanly. Although I think she's going to have a hard time typing after this and doing her.
And I don't know if that was necessarily like planned that way, or that's just kind of how it panned out. But I wasn't upset by the end of the movie by any means. I guess you kind of assume that she was going to kill the guy and she was going to survive, and you know, it was all going to be fine.
The one thing that I will say, and it always kind of bums me out when I see it and I notice it right away, is in this case, Chekhov's corkscrew, which is very early on. When she sets down her phone, I believe, before the killer steals it, she sets it down on a table by the door, and there is a corkscrew sitting there for no apparent reason. It's just there, and I just had a feeling that that was going to come back to play at some point, and it is what is the final struggle to survive moment of reaching for the corkscrew.
See, I didn't notice it.
Yeah, I always do. Okay. Because I write, and because I look for these things, which are sometimes tropes, but also because that's what I would have to think about is, where is this device going to come from later on? There were so many other things that she utilized that weren't announced like that, like the wasp killer that she had in her kitchen. There were things that were on the floor that obviously from her struggles and stuff, and it makes sense that it would be in there considering where she lives, but it wasn't like we saw a wasp killer earlier in the film. But her using it made a degree of sense when she used it to Mara's eyes.
Yeah, but you could have figured that, because when Sarah's over, they could have just opened a bottle of wine and set the corkscrew down. And, you know, right. That's where they set it down. And I guess it didn't have to be sitting there. So, I don't know.
Yeah, and she was making dinner, and so I would have assumed that, yeah, with what she was trying to make, wine would have made sense with it, too. And maybe they did have wine sitting out when they were talking.
I don't know.
I don't know how far they got into that. I feel
like we're starting to get a little nitpicky.
Yeah, well,
how the fucking corkscrew get there?
I think that that's kind of what you have to do, is you can't just say that this is a perfect movie. It's a very good movie.
Yes.
And like I said, as far as this type of movie goes, which is as soon as I saw Sarah getting stabbed repeatedly by the killer, it was just so brutal that it was that moment of like, I got squeamish, because that's the kind of thing that I have a problem with. Violence against women, especially violence against women, violence against pets. And there was a moment later on in here where there was almost the violence against pets, which fortunately got denounced. But
yeah, I was the same way.
Yeah. So those are the things that I have real problems with. But I recognize that it's a personal problem, and it doesn't make it bad in how it was used in the movie. It just shows the brutality of this guy
and
what he's going to do.
I think the guy who wrote this and the guy who directed it and all that probably know that that's a soft spot for a lot of people.
Well, Kate Siegel, the actress who played Maddie, is also one of the co-writers on this.
Yeah, and her boyfriend, fiance, or whatever, was the other one, right?
I guess. I didn't realize what their relationship was, but yeah, I
totally bumping uglies.
Good for them.
I'm a little jealous.
Another great moment is when she is pretty sure that she's not going to live through this. She goes to her laptop and she types up a description of the guy who is killing her.
Which I thought that was actually really cool.
Yeah. Now she can't get online, so she has no way to send it off in an email. But just doing it and then closing her laptop means that hopefully he's not going to go and sweep the whole place afterwards. He seems like he's into just wanton destruction. He's not showing any signs of, I have to clean this afterwards to mm-hmm. make sure that nobody finds me. It's almost like a, what is that movie where everybody's running around killing people because it's the night where they get to do that?
Oh, The Purge.
Yeah, it's almost like that. It's like he's just on a party town of, I get to go out in the woods and kill people because they're in some secluded area where I can get away with this. Again, we don't know his motivations at all, but he doesn't seem like he's afraid that other people are going to come by and discover what he's doing. So, and by the time they do, he doesn't care.
Yeah, I did really like his mask too. It was really simple, and I thought it did a good job of, you know, because what mask hasn't been used already?
Yeah, and it was very effective at the beginning of disguising who he was, but then they get rid of it very quickly, which I think is good because it, as strange as it is, he takes off his mask and it makes him more terrifying.
Yeah, but I feel like if they took off his mask, there should have been more of a reason as to why this guy that you know nothing about is the one killing her, whereas if he kept the mask on, you don't really know who he is. So it could continue to be completely anonymous and
yeah,
pointless as to why he's there.
Well, the other thing is that this movie doesn't look like it has the room for a sequel, at least
not
using this killer, unless they do a prequel and they go into his history of why he is who he is. but it's pretty definitive that he doesn't make it out of this.
Yeah. He's probably a killer because he tried having sex with a bowl of macaroni and cheese one time, and he burnt his dick.
Well, it was right after Kraft changed the recipe, and that just pisses people off.
Jesus. I hate fuck this macaroni and cheese because he changed the recipe.
Mm.
Now I'm mentally picturing a guy hate fucking a bowl of macaroni and cheese.
Now, is it the cheese or is it the shells? I think it might be the macaroni and cheese.
No, the shells to me are subpar and disgusting. The cheese tastes right. Synthetic, so I am all powder all day. Annie's makes a very good shells and cheese substance in a silvery pouch, which does not taste synthetic or shitty, so I would go that route, but Kraft all day, hands down.
Yeah. I'm totally on board with the Kraft.
You want to rank it or you want to keep talking?
No, let's rank it.
Okay. Rewatchability 4?
Just because of the type of movie it is, I'll go 3 for me. But I missed the opportunity. I was going to watch this with the wife. We were really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And then we didn't get to it by Saturday night. And I'm like, well, I need to see this. And you're not going to be home in time for me to record the show on Sunday. Which then the show got moved to Monday, and I looked like even more of a dick.
Just watch it again with her. She'll be
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, I'll probably have to.
Sorry, you were going to say something?
No. Story.
5?
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's good.
It's simple and effective, and it's smart. And the characters... there was nobody in this... I mean, there was very few people in this. But there was nobody in this that I felt was unbelievable or, you know, a waste of time. I think that every part of this, I believed in them.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate because there were characters that did not stick around very long. That I'm like, oh, I would have liked to see more of them before they got stabbed in the face.
Yeah. So going off what Corey said is, in terms of the limited cast, there are 5 people, one of which you only see via FaceTime.
Yeah. For a few seconds at least.
And 3 of them die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. So, scariness.
4.
Yeah. It's pretty solid.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I felt terrified for Maddie in the house, and I felt terrified as other people were around for them. I felt really terrified for Bitch.
You just wanted to say bitch.
I just kept waiting for the cat to come back, and I'm like, oh god, that poor cat. Or I thought that the cat was already going to be something that was dead, that was going to pop up somewhere. And I'm glad that they didn't do that, not just because it seems like it's cliche, mm-hmm. but also because I just don't want to see that.
I agree. But yeah, overall, this is a really, really good movie. I get why everyone's got a huge boner for it.
Yeah, I mean, good on them for making a quality film, and
I feel like, I wanted to say this, and I completely forgot till right now, but I feel like this is an updated version of Wait Until Dark, which, if you're not familiar, was a 50s horror movie in which it was a blind woman, and the last 15 right. minutes of the movie were completely black.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but absolutely, I completely get where you're going for.
Yeah.
And I like that it felt the technology that was used in it made sense in how they used it and didn't get undermined just by, oh, we cut the power so nothing works. It's like, no, you cut the power, but she still kept trying to get to other people's cell phones, and he knew to keep them away from her, but it still made sense in everything that they did, that it wasn't just like, oh, why didn't we think of that, or why didn't we just do this? And all these moments of her trying to get out and moving around the house and stuff, there was a thought process to which rooms I go into. If I hide in here, he's going to find me, or he can see me through the windows. If I go underneath, they did so many great things with it that I don't want to. If you haven't seen it by now, you really shouldn't have listened to all of this.
Very true.
But there's still a lot of great things that are just, they're worth watching it to kind of see how the interplay between them and how they're each thinking things through as they're doing it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So speaking of doing it, you can do it by contacting us and leaving us a voicemail at 805-328-3966 or email us at pot@gncast.com. Like we said, Lucy did, and we might have her on the show. That could happen to you. You don't know. You don't try.
It's true.
It's like winning the lottery, except it costs less. You can leave us a message on the website as well. You can also follow the show on Twitter or Instagram at Podcast of Terror, and also subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, now Google Play, or any of your favorite podcatchers, and leave us feedback on whichever one you like. All subscription options can be found under the subscribe tab at gncast.com. And finally, you can join our Facebook page under Galactic Casts. Matt, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Matt the Lifeguard. And you are Don't Ask Comics?
I am at Don't Ask Comics on Twitter. Fuck, you can also find the comics that I associate with at don'taskcomics.com.
Do it.
Please do it.
Next week on the Podcast of Terror.
Next week, we're going to be releasing the Wolf King Studios Marathon Hour of the Podcast of Terror, in which Corey did a spectacular job in my absence because I thought it would be cooler to go to band practice than do a podcast. True story, actually. But yeah, I'm going to be out of town, so we're not going to be able to record. So instead of not having something to release for a week, we're gonna release that for you in case anyone missed it. So you'll have to listen to Corey just dick swinging, doing a great job of it. And then we will be back second week of May. It's fucking May already.
Jesus.
Yeah, right? That's what she said. So yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a normal episode. So thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you guys then.
Stay scary, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Podcast of Terror. You can help Galactic Netcast pay for our web and audio hosting by supporting us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/galacticnetcasts and pledge as little as $1 a month.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.